Welcome to Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, an hour-long conversation about your health with Atlanta internist Dr. Adrian Douglas. Dr. Douglas has been a fixture at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital for over 20 years. He is a fellow of the American College of Physicians. He also has an MD-VIP affiliated practice in Buckhead. For the next hour, we will explore important health topics for men and women, and we will take your calls live at 404-880-9255. Here's your host, Dr. Adrian Douglas.
Good evening, Atlanta. I'm Dr. Adrian C. Douglas, your host of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas. June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. And to that end, we're going to discuss the important topic of dementia. Dementia, a clinical syndrome that is a progressive deterioration of cognition, or in other words, your brain function, severe enough to impair your occupational and social functioning. Also, your independence is undoubtedly impacted. Now, the major risk factor for dementia is aging, getting older each day. Each day that goes by, you're moving, or rather, your risk of dementia increases. And as it is right now, dementia affects 10% of older U.S. citizens. In most persons, Alzheimer's disease is the primary cause of dementia. So with us this evening, I have the distinct pleasure of introducing Dr. Eric Awad. Dr. Awad is a board-certified neurologist and a fellow of the American College of Neurology. He serves on staff at Piedmont Atlanta Hospital. Dr. Awad, welcome to Drive Time. Please tell us about your academic journey to your practice here in Atlanta.
Thank you very much for having me, and I hope I'll be able to explain a few things about this common problem that, unfortunately, has become a big burden on families and obviously on cost and so forth. So I am originally from, I'm Mediterranean, and originally from Syria, and went to school overseas and came to the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta, where I did my residency and fellowship. After finishing school, which was about, I guess, 14 years or so, I joined Piedmont Hospital and have been there since then. I am in solo practice across the street from Piedmont Hospital, and as you said, I am on faculty at Piedmont Hospital, affiliated with Piedmont.
What was it that led you to neurology?
I loved math when I was younger, and I think neurology is probably the closest field to math in medicine in general, because the central nervous system is a beautiful part of the human being, actually of all animals in general. And it's probably the area where 1 + 1 is close to 2 in medicine in general.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I tell you, it's been a wonderful experience working with you over the years at Piedmont Hospital. And again, I'd like to thank you for being on air with us today.
Thank you for having me again.
So dementia, I mean, this is something that is, you know, it affects everyone. All right. So, you know, right now as it is where I am in life, you know, I'm a baby boomer. So being a baby boomer, this is so important. For a number of us baby boomers, we are in the midst of the middle of our life, the middle of our life in that we are, you know, in some situations still responsible for and helping our kids, you know, get on their feet. But yet we're also concerned about our parents as they get older. And one of the things as we all get older is that almost like everything else, certain elements of function aren't what they used to be. I mean, you know, your metabolism slows down. You know, your cardiac function slows down, your kidney function slows down, your liver function, all these other organs. So invariably cognition also does too. Thinking, that slows down also, your ability to do that. But there are certain conditions in which there is a notable difference from what is normal, hence dementia. So can you tell us, in terms of dementia, when do we have to start being concerned about it? Because family members are usually the people that are, if you will, behind the curtain. A lot of individuals may put on their professional face or their work face and go out in the world and get by, but family members are the ones that really kind of know when something is different. So there are subtle things that begins the process of noting that there is a change in someone's brain function. It may not always be dementia.
Yeah. Correct. And of course, besides the person who is suffering from memory problems, as you kindly put it, the family members are also victims of this problem and eventually become very stressed out and develop their own problems because of having to deal with the anxiety and the sometimes even the depression that all stems from having their beloved one deteriorating cognitively right in front of their eyes. Mm-hmm. So a condition called mild cognitive impairment, mm-hmm. or MCI, was sort of developed as a some cases of it as a pre-Alzheimer's clinical manifestation, where we are able to actually help some of these patients and maybe slow down the risk of it progressing into the full Alzheimer's disease. When we start to notice that the activities of daily living are being compromised, and the patient is making mistakes that are affecting his work status or his relationship with family members, or doing things like leaving food on the stove and causing some issues at home. That's when, and especially if it's repetitive, that's when we start thinking this is a lot more than just mild cognitive impairment. The definition of mild cognitive impairment is actually where the patient is able to continue living as close to normal life as possible and continues to be able to work and drive and so forth, but is definitely having problems that are not causing major catastrophes, let's say. It's a very fine line between this MCI and especially the advanced MCI and early Alzheimer's disease.
So we use tools. We a lot of times we send individuals to get formal testing that helps us to kind of determine where someone is on the spectrum of normal cognition or brain function, MCI versus dementia.
Correct. So when faced with a beloved one whom we are suspecting that the memory is not doing as well as it should, it is very important that the patient is seen by a physician, and we make sure that there are no secondary causes or other etiologies, other problems that could cause mimics of the so-called Alzheimer's disease. And these could be nutritional, they could be structural, they could be psychiatric, they could be metabolic. So all of these things can possibly be corrected, but they have to be evaluated by a professional medical provider or physician who has expertise in the area.
You're listening to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian Douglas. On tonight's show, we're talking about brain health and dementia. Our guest expert tonight is Dr. Eric Awad, board-certified neurologist, fellow of the American College of Neurology. You can join us in the conversation with your questions by calling 404-880-9255. Atlanta, if you're out there listening, I know that you know someone that's had some problems with memory. If there is a special person in your life that you want to call and let us know about, we really want to hear about what your experiences have been with this devastating condition. Dr. Watts, so these things gets kind of in my wheelhouse, you know, as an internist, when people come in and I'm starting to see different things that are not necessarily right with their cognition, then I start to think about other things, ultimately, that I need to rule out before I begin the process of evaluating them and eventually evaluating or referring them to you to kind of look further into it. So I have to think about whether or not they may have some problem with their thyroid, their metabolism. I have to think about whether or not there may be a nutritional deficiency, like B12 deficiency. I have to think about whether or not they have any type of structural problem. In other words, it may be a problem with a blockage of the circulation of certain fluids in their brain, some type of condition called hydrocephalus. So that may be the problem. It may not be Alzheimer's dementia, but there may be something that could be, in fact, reversibly. I have to think about whether or not they're severely depressed. And with a global pandemic going on right now, there's a lot of depression out there right now. A lot of people are being put, or rather have been siloed off in our different areas and haven't had the touches with their loved ones and friends. And that can be insidious, and that can be devastating. That can cause a change in their cognition. And so we get into this condition called false dementia or pseudo-dementia. So those things need to be ruled out also. With all the stress that's going on, there have been a lot of people that have turned to substances also, too. And using them too much can also lead to problems in addition. So those things are some of the things that we have to think about also when we start to see some type of decline. But ultimately, correct, we are concerned about the possibility of some type of dementia or pre-dementia.
Correct. And so the disease itself, Alzheimer's disease, is called primary dementia. Primary means we've looked everywhere and have not really found a definite, reversible etiology that would cause this. And it unfortunately, the cells just die on their own. And with all of the research that's been going on for years, there are so many different theories, but we still don't know exactly what really causes the accumulation of abnormal substances in the brain, the amyloid and the tau and all of these other bad guys that end up causing the death of neurons and manifesting with several disturbances in different domains of cognition.
So we get into a condition of irreversible damage and death of the cells. So we deal with different types of organ failures. We deal with kidney failure. We deal with liver failure. So we're talking about brain failure. In so many words, I mean, it is to the point where once it starts to begin, there is a subtle and eventually a real notable decline in ability to do different things, functioning. And at this point, you know, there aren't really any type of cures, which is the challenge. But there are different medicines that we have available at our disposal that can help. Do you want to elaborate on those different meds that we can use to kind of help with the situation or slow it down, or the best that we have anyway?
A very common, I shouldn't say mistake, but a very common belief among a lot of patients is that the medications that we have available now actually delay or stop the progression of the disease. Unfortunately, they don't. All of the medications that we have available now, what they end up doing is help some memory functions, but they really have no effect at all on the course of the disease itself, which unfortunately continues to progress. Now the hope is that research will bring more of those, and we are awaiting a new medication that hopefully by next week we should know something, whether the FDA is clearing it or not, that will hopefully delay the progression of the disease. However, I do encourage a lot of patients to consider clinical research, because I think knowing that there really is nothing available in the market now that will slow down or stop the progression or even reverse the damages that have already happened, that there is the door of clinical research, and there are so many studies that are being carried on either in big academic centers or in small research centers where they would welcome patients that are open to something like this. And of course, this is all cost at the cost of the sponsor, and then we do tests and we do everything that is necessary to monitor the progression and hope that we would be able to come up with good results. Good.
404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. You're listening to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Douglas, and tonight's show we're talking about Alzheimer's, dementia, and also brain health. And we'd love to hear from you, Atlanta. Love to hear about your experiences, your knowledge, your questions. Give us a call at 404-880-9255. So there is something on the horizon, some innovation, I suspect. It's going to be a little bit different from the traditional pills, this potential treatment that's on the horizon. What type of mechanism is that? Is that something new? What are we going to do this time?
It is something new. It's still, I have to say that it's still very debatable.
Mm-hmm.
The efficacy of it is being tested again, and we should know hopefully by next week whether the FDA cleared this or not. And it's going to take a few months before it's available.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the new medication works is by attacking a substance called amyloid that we believe sort of collects in certain parts of the brain and opens the door to these cells dying. And hopefully would prevent that from happening. Monoclonal antibodies have become awesome medications that every discipline in medicine has been using them.
Absolutely. We recently started to use them with the battle against the pandemic. So
exactly.
That's probably the highest profile most
yes.
recently. So,
so. Right.
Well, I think we're going to go ahead and take a break. And you're going to call back at 404-880-9255. You're listening to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Douglas. Call us, stay on the line. If you have a question about tonight's discussion about brain health and dementia, call us at 404-880-9255. We'll be right back.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by MDVIP. Dr. Adrian Douglas, host of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, is an affiliated physician with MDVIP. He has practiced internal medicine at Piedmont Hospital for more than 20 years. Dr. Douglas's primary care practice is focused on prevention. His patients take part in a wellness program made up of comprehensive, advanced health screening. screenings and diagnostic tests that have been shown to detect issues earlier. He then customizes a wellness plan based on each patient's individual results. More information is available at mdvip.com.
Welcome back to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian Douglas. If you'd like to take part in tonight's live conversation about brain health and dementia, call us at 404-880-9255. Call us right now. We have someone, Marlene from Philadelphia. Thanks for calling, Marlene.
All right, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for calling us.
My question is, I'd like to know, is Alzheimer's hereditary?
There is a subset of individuals that have Alzheimer's dementia as a hereditary component, but the vast majority is not hereditary, at least my remembrance. Dr. Awad?
That is correct. The majority of cases of Alzheimer's are actually what we call sporadic, and those are not hereditary.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. We have Bonnie in Atlanta. Thanks for calling Drive Time.
Hi, this is Bonnie. My question is in regards to diagnosing Alzheimer's. I have a friend who's had the basic test for dementia in the doctor's office several times over the last couple of years, and he's done fine with that, but he struggles remembering things that happened a couple of days ago or a week ago. He'll just completely forget things and conversations and places he's gone and how to get places. Yeah, he can pass the basic test at the doctor's office.
Well, and these short-term memory loss is a component of clinical Alzheimer's disease. I have to defer to Dr. Awad in regards to missing, being able to forget things from yesterday, but yet being able to pass the clinical test, the neurocognitive test, which are really the foundation of us making the diagnosis. Dr. Awad.
Exactly.
Thank you for this question, which I think is extremely important. So part of the problem, Bonnie, is the fact that the tests that we have available now that would make us think that this is early Alzheimer's are not cost-effective because of the inavailability of any cure or medications that would actually stop the progression. So a PET scan and spinal fluid analysis looking for certain biomarkers are tests that unfortunately are not covered by third-party payers yet because they are pretty expensive, and with no cure or the availability of any medication that will slow down the progression of it, these tests are not available on the market. Clinical research, however, will cover most of those depending on the sponsor and depending on the clinical trial itself. But like I said, as hopefully things become better and when there is an option of a cure or a medication that will slow down the progression, I think these tests will become a lot readily available and a lot less in terms of cost. I hope this answers
can I ask
the question.
You something else?
Sure.
He had an MRI as well, and it didn't show any structural issue. Will that show up on a test like that, on an MRI, an Alzheimer's problem?
Excellent question. I'm glad you asked this because, unfortunately, I see this a lot with many of my patients where they'd say, well, we had an MRI of the brain, and the MRI looked normal. So how could I have
exactly
Alzheimer's disease? So the reality of this is an MRI of the brain is looking at the structure of the brain. And only in advanced cases of Alzheimer's do we actually see changes in the structure, which is certain parts of the brain sort of shrink or atrophy. But in early cases, an MRI of the brain should actually be normal. So remember, if you're looking at a picture of a person, is what you're doing when you are, and being able to tell whether this about the personality of that person, not that easy by just looking at the picture of it. So an MRI is actually a picture of the brain itself. It doesn't necessarily tell me the functionality of the brain itself. And this is where we are still behind. So we rely on the description of the problems that the patient is having, and the input from the family members and the coworkers and so forth. And then we do the cognitive tests, and we have some objectivity in that. It's unfortunately, like you said, some people have, they know how to score well on these tests, but they, in reality, they're not functioning very well when it comes to everyday life. So we still are a little bit behind in having reliable objective tests besides what the patient or family members are complaining about.
Okay, thank you very much. It's been very helpful.
So before you hang up, you know, Dr. Wadd was making a comment in terms of the functional tests. A PET scan is a functional test. That's a metabolic test. It looks for areas of the brain, and it's looking for glucose or sugar uptake. And so it's a characteristic finding that may be seen with the PET scan frequently is that may not necessarily be seen on an MRI, a structural study. So that is a functional metabolic study that's looking to see if there's certain characteristic areas on the brain that may not be functioning like they should be. And so that would help. Also, a lumbar puncture, you know, that is when a skilled healthcare provider is able to stick a syringe or a needle in the lumbar spine and get fluid out, and then it's sent for analysis. So there's certain findings, particular proteins, which are going to be characteristic, pathognomonic, or actually, you know, definitive for Alzheimer's. Now, those are aggressive and invasive tests that your friend may not have had. The things that you talked about are some of the basic things that are done early on, but
hasn't had those yet.
So some of these other things are still on the table.
It would have to be very important, though, Bonnie, to make sure that the labs that the spinal fluid is collected at or sent to is able to do these specific tests. They're not the routine tests that are done on spinal fluid to check for, let's say, infections or inflammations or even multiple sclerosis. So these have a completely different panel that unfortunately is not 100% accurate either. But it tends to be to tilt the scale either way. These are used in a lot of clinical research labs where the trial dictates that the spinal fluid is collected to measure these substances in the spinal fluid.
Bonnie, thanks for calling. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. We're talking about dementia and brain health. Atlanta, we're waiting to hear from you. Call us at 404-880-9255. Dr. Wadd, what else can we do in terms of preventing that? Some wholesome living, no doubt. Getting adequate rest, drinking adequate fluids, eating the right foods, staying away from substances. Those are the type of things that we should always advocate. We advocate that for heart health. Those type of things that we advocate for brain health also. Would that be right?
So you said the magic word, which is what's good for the heart is good for the brain, definitely. In addition to what you said, patients that have either chronic hypertension or diabetes or other illnesses, but particularly hypertension and diabetes, have to pay attention to controlling these two conditions, which certainly make it a lot easier or open the door for progressive degenerative disorders of the brain, which one of them is Alzheimer's disease. So controlling blood pressure is extremely important, and controlling diabetes is very important. Simple things like sleep is a big deal too. We are discovering every day other elements in life that can affect the integrity of these brain cells that are doing what they're supposed to be doing when it comes to cognition and memory. In terms of living the healthy lifestyle, the so-called Mediterranean diet has been shown to be very helpful in helping the integrity of longevity of these some of these cells in the brain and other parts of the body. This would be foods that are rich in omega-3, fish in particular, olive oil, fruits and vegetables and so forth. And then, like you said, exercise is extremely important. Being out and being mentally active through social interactions, and then, of course, physical exercise.
Excellent. We have someone on the line, Kathy from Kennesaw. Thanks for calling Drive Time.
Thank you. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
And the question is, I have a lot of trouble trying to remember what I'm going to say to someone sometimes. Like, I have, I'll be in a conversation, and they'll ask me a question about maybe some names of something or someone, and I can see it and see the person, and the name is on the tip of my tongue, but I can't get it out. And then it comes out like maybe later or something, but, you know, I'm in the middle of the conversation. I stop because I get to the point where, that's the name, you know, and it won't come out. And they're looking at me, and I feel real embarrassed. And I'm going to be 70 next week.
How long has this been going on? Is this something something that's been rapid, or has it been going on for a while, slow?
Like slow. I noticed it more over the last year.
Okay.
I just retired like 3 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
And thank you. I was in a real stressful job in nursing, as a director of an intensive care unit. And so, I don't know, it just got that way more recently over this past year.
Well, in the context of what you're describing, certainly this talk is about memory and you know, ultimately, worst-case scenario, some forms of dementia. And so, I mean, that's certainly something to think about, but with your description of your history, I mean, you know, there are a lot of people right now that are dealing with this pandemic in the form of the trauma. A number of our healthcare providers have been traumatized by the enormous loss that they've bared witness to over the last year. And in a lot of situations, their inability to really impact the outcomes. And so in that context, not to say that ultimately there may need to be further evaluation. I would submit that you should see your provider to be evaluated about your memory, but also the issue of what has happened and what has happened to you this last year. That may be a part of it. There may be an element of some underlying emotional anxiety, post-traumatic also, that may be a part of what's going on, particularly since you made a comment about this last year. And what I know that a number of my sisters and brethren have dealt with in regards to this global pandemic. Dr. Awad?
So this is actually a very common complaint that I hear a lot from patients. I think that no doubt being evaluated is very important. As we get older, there are certain changes that happen in the functionality of the brain itself, and retrieval is one of the things that kind of slow down, particularly for names that we don't use that often. That would be or do not necessarily interest us that much at the current time. So that an example would be names of actors or movies or things like this, where you used to care a lot for something like this years ago, and nowadays things have changed and you developed interest in other areas. But are you noticing any other problems besides finding names at all?
I'm depressed, crying a lot and anxious a lot. And so I have sought, some help.
Very good.
So, because I think my brain is just so full, and I'm just trying to clear my brain and relax.
Very good. And Kathy, do you, so besides being, thank God we have a lot of medications that are safe and have been available and used for many, many years that will help with clinical depression, have you looked into developing interests in other things, like maybe picking up a hobby or something like this, to where, particularly after you are done with work and retired, to where you went from a very busy job to almost emptiness? This is why sometimes we worry about people that leave a high responsibilities and very demanding jobs that keep them busy all the time. Particularly, and interestingly, physicians are among the ones that have that issue and pretty a risk for developing depression and even, believe it or not, even suicide at times. Going from a busy life to almost emptiness can have a lot of negative effects. So once things completely open up a lot, and once, like you said, you've already looked into help, professional help, and hopefully will be put on the right medication, you should start looking into other avenues in life that would kind of keep you busy, but things that bring pleasure to your life, and developing a hobby or going out on trips or things like this.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks,
Kathy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and good luck. Hopefully things will get better.
404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. We're talking about dementia and brain health. I have board-certified neurologist, fellow of the American College of Neurology, Dr. Eric Awad, with me tonight. Please call 404-880-9255. Dr. Ward, what can I do to kind of help with my mental, what type of exercise can I do? I know what I need to do with my body. I need to run around that track. I need to walk around that track at this age, if you will, run around the track, whatever. Lift weights. What type of mental exercises can I do to help me with clearing myself and making sure that, my brain is functioning the best that it can?
So in terms of so-called mental exercise, I do, of course, strongly believe in physical exercise a lot more than just mental exercise. Mm-hmm. I would say, like I was talking to Kathy and talked to her about finding things that we would call stimuli that would stimulate different parts of the brain, be it emotional or artistic or so forth. These are probably a lot more important than just sitting at home with a pen and paper and trying to solve crossword puzzles or other types of puzzles that could create some frustration if you're not able to do them as good as you did at some point in the past.
So getting out and enjoying life, you know,
exactly.
as the world opens up, you know, as more and more venues open up, and when they're safe and when you feel safe, go to the museum, go to see a play, go to see a performance, musical performance, walk out in the park, go to a national park, state park, do all these type things that'll help with my mental wellness and also with my brain functioning. Stimulation, stimulation,
correct.
Stimulation.
A lot of my patients volunteer in so many things that will bring some responsibility to and of course help other people and so forth.
And pleasure also.
And of course,
with,
yes.
With the volunteerism.
Sure, sure.
We have Shani from Atlanta.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks for calling Drive Time.
My question was, how do you find clinical trials?
There's a number of ways you can find clinical trials. Obviously, you always have Dr. Google. That's one place you can go. But a number of the different medical centers, particularly the universities and the hospital systems and the medical schools are sources of clinical trials. And also there are certain doctors that also, in addition to their clinical practice, take part in clinical trials. Dr. Watt?
So I am affiliated with a research center here in Atlanta. I guess I could plug them. iResearch is their name. And we are doing, several clinical trials. We are trying to actually work on the so-called mild cognitive impairment, or MCI, which is the pre-Alzheimer's, or believed to be the pre-Alzheimer's. You can look it up. It's called iResearch, or their number is 404-537-1281. But there are other facilities, of course, in town. Big universities have clinical trials going on, and like Dr. Douglas said, Google, or there is actually clinicalresearch.gov or something like this. The government has a website where all of the clinical trials are listed. And you would be able to find something that is close to you and learn a little bit about it.
That's awesome. Thank you for the information.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. So we've focused a lot about, you know, early diagnosis and obviously diagnosis when people are active. But what about when people have advanced, Dr. Wadd, and there is at a position where there's not a lot that we can offer in terms of even medications. The medicines, as we said, the ones that are on the table right now really don't impact the natural history of the disease.
Correct.
So it is a disease that once the train starts rolling, it eventually is going to roll on down the track, and people are going to be in a position where they're not going to be able to take care of themselves. Now, That's an enormous, enormous pressure. I won't say it's a burden, because this is family members that love their family members. But it is an enormous responsibility that is thrust upon the caregivers. So there are resources to help with that.
So definitely, at that point, two things are most important when it comes to the patient herself or himself. And those two are safety and comfort, where safety becomes the most important thing, where we are able to make sure that the patient is not doing anything that could potentially harm themselves, like wandering, for instance, or burning themselves, or doing things, falling, or doing things that could potentially bring more physical damage. Comfort is very important too, because, you know, these unfortunate patients are living the last few days, months, or years of their lives, and it's very important that we keep them comfortable, sleeping well, eating well, and not cause arguments and fights or things like this. Now, the caretaker is a completely other chapter of managing patients.
And so important also.
Exactly. Very, very important. I mean, there's a condition called caretaker disease, which is pretty serious. Yeah.
I think we have Xavier from Atlanta. Xavier, thanks for calling Drive Time.
Hi, can you all hear me?
Yes, we can. Thanks for calling.
Of course. One thing that I was interested in is I know that, like, the world is full of color, and in every tinge and every hue, there's like a memory waiting to be experienced, lived, and kind of encoded as a memory. And one thing that happens in patients that have dementia and Alzheimer's is they lose their memories, and it's stolen from them, and they lose the color, basically, of the world and of the memories. And I was wondering if it's possible if patients could find or renew a sense of purpose in life, because I know it also happens that they lose purpose and lose meaning within their lives.
So Xavier, good question. That's going to depend on what stage of the disease these patients are in. So early in the course of the disease, it is very important that we make sure that the patient himself or herself are involved in all activities that the family is doing, and maybe hopefully even encourage them to, like Dr. Douglas said earlier, be active physically, emotionally, socially, and so forth. Unfortunately, as the disease progresses, the light of something like this starts to dim, and that's when the two other factors that I talked about, comfort and safety, become a lot more important.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Drive Time on WCLK. I'm Dr. Adrian Douglas. Please call back at 404-809-2255. We're talking about brain health and dementia.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by MDVIP. Dr. Adrian Douglas, host of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, is an affiliated physician with MDVIP. He has practiced internal medicine at Piedmont Hospital for more than 20 years. Patients in his primary care practice take part in an annual wellness program. He offers same and next day appointments that start on time and last as long as needed. Dr. Douglas is also available by phone after hours. More information is available at mdvip.com.
This is Dr. Douglas. We're coming back from break, and we have been talking about dementia and brain health, and we really have had a wonderful conversation this evening with Dr. Eric Awad, board-certified neurologist, a fellow of American College of Neurology. Dr. White, I want to say thanks again for being here with us. Thanks for bringing your wisdom to my listening audience. And now, how can my listeners get in contact with you? And maybe there may be some other people interested in clinical research on this most important topic.
So like I mentioned, clinical research is an excellent way to look into Is this the correct diagnosis or not, and what can we do about this? The facility I work with is iResearch. That's small I and then capital R research, iResearch. And we are in Decatur, Georgia, and I am there half a day or one day a week. You can reach us by calling Katie at 404-537-1281, and we are constantly looking for patients and hoping that we would be able to fit them into clinical trials, which we are constantly looking for too, through contact with other sponsors that are testing their product. Like you said, I am at Piedmont Hospital, and my office is NeuroCare Center of Atlanta, and I am at 404-355-8804.
Great, thanks so much. Thanks so much. We have had a wonderful talk today about dementia. We talked about Alzheimer's disease being the most common cause of it. We made some references, you know, to another form of dementia, vascular dementia. And so when we talked about hypertension and diabetes, Atlanta, we were talking about another form of dementia, and that sometimes we think primarily Alzheimer's, but in fact it is something related to a lack of adequate circulation to the blood to the brain cells from the diagnoses of hypertension, diabetes, and cholesterol too, for that matter, also. So that's where the good living.
And smoking, of course.
And smoking also too. All the things that, as we mentioned before with Dr. Awad, all the things that are good for the heart are good for the brain.
Correct.
So, Atlanta, we want you to make sure that you maintain an adequate weight, keep your blood pressure under control, make sure your sugar's under control, make sure you get adequate sleep, make sure you hydrate yourself well, make sure you eat the correct meals high in fruits and vegetables, even nuts, you know, particularly walnuts, things along that line, and the berries, all those things tend to be helpful in terms of reducing inflammation. And by the way, inflammation, again, we've talked about it, that's a recurring theme in Atlanta. It's all about inflammation. In almost everything that we deal with, there's an inflammatory component to it, and certainly that's the brain is not anything any different. So we're trying to live a life that limits your exposure to toxins, things which cause inflammation, pollution being also something that we have to deal with, being urbanites also too. So we've had a wonderful talk, and so we look forward to our next episode, which will come out in July. But before we leave, remember, dementia, it comes in many forms. It affects 10% of older U.S. citizens. Alzheimer's dementia is the primary form, but as we just mentioned, many, many other causes can occur. Over 6 million Americans have Alzheimer's dementia. It's a syndrome that impacts your cognition or the way your brain functions. It affects your ability to maintain independence. It also affects your ability to maintain a certain quality of life. It's so imperative that you take the time to come in and sit with your provider and get evaluated. And for family members, if you're seeing things which are unusual, make sure you take the time to take your family member in and get them evaluated. Unfortunately, you know, there is no cure, but certainly early diagnosis is so important. June, this is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month, and June the 20th, the summer solstice, the longest day of the year, the Alzheimer's Association are going to have their national fundraiser. And it would be so important for you to consider supporting this worthy cause. There's so many things you can do to battle this battle that we have with dementia. Clinical research also. But this is, you know, the end for tonight. And we look forward to seeing you when we're going to meet back with you in July on Drive Time with Dr. Douglas, on Wednesday, July the 7th at 6 p.m. Please be back with us. We love having you here tonight. Thanks and good night.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Drive Time with Dr. Douglas on WCLK. More information about Dr. Douglas and MDVIP is available at mdvip.com or by phone at 1-866-347-9339. You can listen to this program a second time on demand at wclk.com. Drive Time with Dr. Douglas is produced by WCLK in conjunction with MDVIP. Executive producer for MDVIP is Sean Kelly. The producer for WCLK is Rob Maynard. On behalf of Dr. Adrian Douglas, MDVIP, and WCLK, we wish you the best of health.